Bang, bang,
well,
bang.
Hello.
Bang.
Hi. I feel like,
so what's happening in the background, JJ?
Yeah, what is going on?
Yeah. Being this is a visual medium and people watch us talk about these things, I now am sitting in my kitchen. Normally, I have a nice little office where everything's like a green screen and all. But we are putting new floors in to our house because I have a dog that you might have heard of. And having carpet and a dog is not always the best thing in the world. So it was either get rid of the dog or get rid of the carpet, and the carpet lost. So
we're ripping out a bunch.
Well, it depends on what day of the week it is and the dogs.
I don't know. I have carpet and dogs, but I can understand. So it depends on.
We're dealing in that situation right now. And so if you hear banging like that, I'm sorry. And I'll try to hit the mute button as much as I can. But
welcome to working from home.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. Like this is like the reality of life working from home permanently. So you know.
So are you getting the new NFT hardwood put in?
Non-flushable turds.
Oh, that's a good one.
Good one, man. I stole that from Loading Ready Run. I'm a huge fan of theirs. They're great Canadian comedians.
Sorry, couldn't help it.
So what else is going on? Let's talk about crypto for a second.
You're our crypto king, right? You've done a bunch of crypto stuff. So
wait, really?
Well, you know, I played the crypto game kind of as like a hobby.
Originally kind of thing, like when it first came out, or
everybody has that story of I could have bought, you know, 30 bitcoins for $30, but I decided not to. Everyone has that story, including myself. I still remember the guy who talked me out of it, and I hate him so much now.
Did he buy it? And then now you
No. I actually remember the moment. It was at Dell. When I was working at Dell, I was sitting in this conference room and he was across from me, and I got the ping being like, hey, I'll sell you 30 Bitcoins for $25 to be exact. And I was like, hey, do you think I should do this? And he's like, how about we go buy some beer instead? And I'm like, yeah, you know what? It seems like a good idea. God, I
know. Yeah. But the thing is, if you had have done that, you probably also would have sold it at like $100 or maybe $1,000, right? So it's not like you're really missed out on millions of dollars. Or you may have lost it, and you may be one of those people petitioning the local government to let you climb through their refuse station looking for your missing hard drive or USB stick.
It's a USB stick. It's like it's literally the size of a thumb.
Right.
And they're for 10 years. They've been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
It's funny how that works.
But yeah.
Yeah. So NFTs and crypto, let's talk about this. Cause you know, not the elephant in the room. I don't know what else to call it at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's my favorite of the centralized, decentralized currencies.
Well, I mean, okay, so let's talk about some NFTs that aren't like mainstreamy, which I guess NFTs not.
There are no mainstream NFTs, are there?
Well, I mean, the whole like Paris Hilton pushing the apes and all that stuff, I consider that like really main, like that's them trying to get the mainstream to adopt it, right? Like when you hire Paris Hilton, obviously you're trying to get more like playtime, right?
I'd say mainstream is if like my friends who are not into tech or like my mom or something were like asking me about it. That to me then becomes mainstream. They're like, what is this thing?
Exactly. So.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think it is mainstream, but they're desperately trying to make it mainstream because all these people with massive amounts of crypto need to exit and they don't have any way to exit. You know, there's a
Series thing. A funding. The Series A funders are trying to get out.
Right. Exactly. And there was this thing where someone kind of said, if you've got a little bit of crypto, it's easy to get out. If you've got a lot of crypto, the best you can do is buy cocaine.
That's pretty accurate. It's pretty accurate. Yeah. Well, here in Austin, there's some gunsmiths that will take Bitcoin. Just saying. So you can go buy your next rifle.
Listen, if I'm going to use Bitcoin to buy a gun, it's not going to be a legally registered gun. Just saying.
It is
Bitcoin, kind of ridiculous, right? Literally the only good use for Bitcoin is for doing illegal things that
still traceable, though.
Well, I was going to say, it is this magic decentralized crime-riddled thing where literally every single thing that happened is permanently written to a record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, in theory, they would need to trace a particular wallet to me, but... You know, people that do that kind of thing are very good at their jobs, and there's trillions of dollars of money being spent by governments to become very good at tracking these things, especially in the crypto world. And I think there's going to be some interesting things where, you know, largely crypto transactions have been untaxed and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. So far.
Like when the government figures out how to tax it, the entire record, every transaction that's ever been made is just sitting there waiting for them to figure out who's who so they can ask them for money.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Well, I think also it's going to be a question of who's going to lobby for it to be, you know, only from this point forward, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Hey, like
Ted Cruz is on that. Don't worry about it. He's on it.
Well, you know, as long as he's not in somewhere else, like as long as he's actually still in the States.
Exactly.
No, I guess the thing about crypto that kind of just gets me is like people keep bringing it up like, oh, it's going to solve everything. Oh, rah, 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 rah. And I'm like, you know what? Like every tech ever invented says it's going to solve everything. It's going to solve this. It's going to solve that. And I mean, I've seen some interesting applications of the idea of blockchain. Yes, I have seen some very interesting applications of that. I've also heard it explained that, you know, basically Git is like doing blockchain, just not exactly the same. And I can kind of see that because it's a ledger of what happened and what was going on. Mm-hmm. But like this whole, like, it's a miracle.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. I think the thing with Git, you know, ignore GitHub, which is again the centralization of a decentralized protocol.
Right.
Like with Git, like any of us can actually rewrite what happens. Mm-hmm. And then we have to argue about who has the true story, right? Whereas the who has the true story is built into the sort of blockchain story based on the validator nodes or whatever they're called, and also the proof of work stuff that
you know,
that goes on in the background.
I mean, like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, it's an interesting idea in terms of the abstract concept. Yes. The abstract concept of what this is and what it does. Okay, I can kind of see it. It's not that new of a concept, just the implementation is actually kind of unique. But what's happened with it is that, like, let's go recreate mining of diamonds in the whatever that was, like the 1840s in Africa. Like, let's go recreate this horrible, horrible experience of everybody mining and we just don't care about the environment and all of the other things that go with it.
Right.
Slight problem.
Yeah, and they even named it the same thing.
I know, they called it mining. Like, people, come on. Like, you don't want to, if you're trying for the PR here, you don't name it after something that's like,
so the next version will be just as horrible but in different ways, and they'll be able to call it fracking.
Yeah,
exactly.
Probably. Well, I mean,
That's
because they're going to like break old like hard drives and pull out the Bitcoin. Like that'll be the fracking part. They'll go like go dumpster diving, going back to all of that. They'll go dumpster diving and they'll break the hard drives and it's fracking Bitcoins.
Reminds me of that cartoon or that popped around yesterday, I think, which was, hey, I'm in the metaverse, infinite possibilities. Oh, yeah. What's the first thing we do? We created landlording.
Yay. Yeah. And then by the way, you can get bankrupt too. Yay.
Really? Come on.
So we actually were having a talk about not exactly metaverse stuff, but there was a interesting point that came up. And I mean, I've thought about it, but I kind of want to toss it out to you both as well, is like this whole thing about the metaverse, how accessible is it? If you have these like platforms where, oh, you can go wander to your, you know, like this group to go speak or blah, 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 blah. There's no text. There's no text for people who can't hear you. What if you can't see? Like how does this metaverse world include people who can't do these things?
So yes, that is a very
Laura, we're making the world a better place.
Oh, of course we are. Of course we are. Tell me when I get a visor like Jordi LaForge.
Well, if you play the if you listen to the propaganda, right? Like there are some really, 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 and it is propaganda, right? It's complete advertising trying to get everyone to use this more. And I played around in the my Oculus Quest 2, which I did try to get one of our DevOps days inside of it. Guess I'm that person.
Yeah, we all said no.
Yeah, gotta shut that shit down real fast. But I will say that the times I have hopped in there and to do stuff, I can see, for instance, elderly people who never got to travel, right? Or they can't travel to go to some place and they want to see the Grand Canyon or go to the top of the Paris or the Eiffel Tower. Like I can see those, again, propaganda, opportunities that aren't available. But if I'm privileged enough to have my eyes and my ears and my voice, if I didn't have one of those three things, the metaverse would be a nightmare because you can't see, you wouldn't be able to do, you can't interact with it. You have to have all your senses to be able to interact with it.
Well, no, you don't have to have all your senses. You have to have two very specific senses.
Yeah.
And so that makes it way worse for people. For people that are, say, blind, they have other ways of dealing with it. For instance, touch, right? They lose that in the metaverse. So how do they know when they're walking to a wall in the metaverse?
Right. Yeah, they don't necessarily get hurt, we hope. Right. Like that hasn't happened yet because reasons, but it's definitely a concern. And I guess whenever there's a new tech like this or something, like we always talk about, oh, well, you know, here's the good things that can do with it. But history has shown us that what's the first thing that happens? All the bad things.
Yes.
Landlording.
Like, well, and that's the thing with, back to crypto. That's the thing with crypto, yeah. Right? Crypto isn't necessarily the problem.
Yeah.
It's the people that have injected all of the horrible human practices into how it works and turned it into a giant fucking scam.
Yeah.
Yep.
The hope that people get is the part that hurts the most. You know, like the people who they buy into it mentally and they just don't have enough of the tools to be able to realize that it's a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And so they buy into it and they get a lot of hope out of it. And then all of their hope comes crashing down. And
so it's like electing Barack Obama, all promise of hope and then no actual useful reality.
Well,
it's
then you end up with Donald Trump.
That's what it is. Yeah. I do want to go back to the NFT thing real quick, which was one of the things that, like, I understand that NFTs don't fit in a lot of spaces, right? Like it doesn't. It's a solution looking for a problem to solve. Like that
scam
is
looking for a problem. But anyway.
Oh sure. Okay. Yes. I've really sat down, tried to think. Like I've stared out at some trees with a glass of scotch, trying to think of something to fit, right? Just because you know it's a mental exercise. And right now, the only successful non-mainstream, what I was going to earlier about the mainstream thing that I've heard about with NFTs is the Ubisoft creating in-game assets, like specifically for one of their games.
No, no, I'm going to stop you right there. What? Why do you need NFT?
No, exactly. And that's where I'm trying to get to, okay. Is that like, I don't like, they could have just had this in a database somewhere,
right?
Inside of their, like, because it's their IP. Like, why is it being attached to the blockchain or the Ethereum blockchain, which costs an insane amount of money to run,
right?
Where you don't gain anything. Like, I can't get my head wrapped around. And I wanted to bring this up because the only thing intellectually that I've been able to think about are software licenses, because they don't exist anyway. So why don't we use something that doesn't really exist anyway to enforce something that doesn't really exist anyway? Also, do you see where the joke that I didn't land very well?
I mean, like I was going to say, you know, if we really want to get into arguments about software licensing, we can. Yeah. but, you know, I don't think we really want to go there. My thing is like, again, this is the same idea. The concept is interesting. If you take it out of this whole Ethereum blockchain world and blah, 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 could you use NFTs as the concept of an NFT where, you know, you own something that isn't mm-hmm. real? Yes. That isn't this or that or the other, or you share, kind of like people share ownership of things. Maybe like I'm thinking in terms of like, if you have a group of people go in to buy something in general, like that idea isn't new. That's not a new idea. And like right now we have contracts that do that. So maybe there's an application there somewhere in the world, but again, it's how it was applied and why it was applied and the weird ass shit that people do. Like,
but they tried that with the Dune, buying the license for Dune or whatever.
Well, they also didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Right. Yeah, that's the problem, license, right?
Jack shit.
Yeah, they bought just a book. Like, who the fuck came up with this? Like, oh yeah, we can finally make the game. Like,
remind me what those groups are called.
DAOs, distributed DAOs. Yeah, I distributed something organizations. Something like that.
Distributed automated organization or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So the interesting
buying
thing
a
is
stock
like,
into a company
is like the point of a DAO is kind of interesting where, because like one of the things that you get with NFTs that are on say Ethereum and stuff is you actually put code into your NFT, right? And it's that code is written and executable, right? And so you mm-hmm. can put the rules like for how to vote and how to do other things into the actual tokens themselves. And that is somewhat interesting, but it's also like, you can't change it. So good luck fixing the bug when someone figures out how to, to do something. And so there have been cases where, and also you can put, if you know someone's wallet, you can put things in it. And so if you write a malicious piece of code into a token and I stick it into JJ's wallet, the moment he tries to do something with it, it'll execute code that may steal other things that are in his wallet and give them to me.
Is that why
it went straight for my ape?
Right.
Exactly.
That whole thing.
Yeah. And so this is a thing that's happening and people are having their stuff stolen right now. And then it's a ransomware situation where basically their recourse is to have to like pay a ransom to get it back.
I got it. What we do is we create a centralized system of rules and checks and balances to enforce, to make sure people aren't screwed over.
I know. Well, I wonder how that concept came up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and bizarre, so, doesn't that's always
what,
work.
Like that's what like OpenSea and stuff is supposed to try and be, right? It's it's a thing that says, oh yes, this really like this person really does own this image and it really is authentically like mm-hmm. sourced from the person who sold it originally, right? But if you've seen, it's like a nightmare and they don't actually enforce any of that stuff and it's flooded with like shit. So there's art websites like DeviantArt have tools now that scrape the various NFT catalog sites looking for things that you have in your DeviantArt to alert you so that you can go and like kick off their remediation process. And the remediation process at, say, OpenSea has gotten so slammed and so busy because turns out if everything you do is a scam, then the only people you're going to get are people that are also wanting to do scams.
Yeah,
like they can't keep up with it. So they've given up even trying. So people that are actually really the artists and stuff behind this stuff, like they have no recourse for when somebody else puts their artwork up as an NFT. And also people put their artwork up on multiple NFT exchanges and stuff and sell it multiple times, and there's no recourse. And the only thing the artist can do is try and beat them to the punch and spend $400 to $600 on fees and gas and all these things to try and put their thing up first on a particular, say, OpenSea. But there's still plenty of other exchanges that other people could do it on. And so this thing that they keep claiming is like a free and open way for people to get paid for their true work isn't real. And the other thing is they talk about the fact that, you know, artists can get paid each time their thing is sold. But that's just a note that's attached to the token and isn't actually enforceable. So it's up to the processing to actually take note of that note and actually decide to pay the artist the second time, the third time, the fourth time.
So yeah, there was that one with the music, I think it was, like some music streaming service. It was like, oh, we pay the artist. Well, it turns out they were just streaming from YouTube.
Right. They were streaming from YouTube and just cutting out the video.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was amazing. Right. Yep. And so there's, speaking of which, there's a like a crypto version of like Twitter that's out there. And one of the things they have to say in their, like, you know, frequently asked questions is don't open your account using your real name or a real photo, because even if you change it later, it's all on the ledger and someone can go back through the history and find anything you've ever written or done. And there's zero way to actually undo it and change what's happened. So let's say you accidentally tweet a password or your address or something. There's literally no recourse except convincing enough people at the like organizational level to completely fork the entire thing.
Yeah. And they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that unless, of course, you're really rich. And right. I believe Ethereum has been forked at least once because someone that was really rich was basically, I think there was a big like theft of Ethereums where someone managed to like thieve like 60% of Ethereums or some ridiculous number. And so they had to fork it because of that to try and get things back.
Yeah.
But now there's two versions of Ethereum running. And which one do you trust? And like, I don't know this stuff super well. So I'm sort of going off what I've heard and what I understand. So I'm probably getting it sort of wrong. But I'm also probably getting it mostly right.
Yep.
Have you all seen there's a video on YouTube called The Line Goes Up?
Mm-mm.
And it's basically,
I've watched every single YouTube video and I have not seen that one.
Fair enough. It's basically this guy, it basically lays out why like NFT is like such a problem. But in order to do so, he basically goes all the way back to the start of Bitcoin and Ethereum and basically goes through all the history of how they came about, how they've been used for scams, for crime, for basically all the way through. So it's a really interesting watch. And of course, there was immediately hundreds of rebuttals from all the crypto nubs saying, oh, but decentralized, but. So, you know.
Yeah.
Like they're all over Twitter are too. Nerd.
I'm so glad
you try to say anything,
they all put .f0 or whatever it is in their usernames, because it just makes it so easy to block, unfollow, unfriend, like whatever it is you have to do to get that shit off your timeline.
It's wild. It's just a wild.
But before we move on, I want to touch back with JJ, your licensing idea. Why is that any different to in-game assets? Like, it's a problem that's already solved with a database.
The only advantage I can see is that it allows for a secondary market, right? Where your old Windows license that you don't need anymore, in theory, you could sell that to someone else without having to go through another party. Right.
But you see, that's a problem of terms and conditions. It's not a problem of the actual thing. If I have a license, I have like a license code, a USB stick with a license dongle. I have something like that. And I could give that to someone else, except the end user licensing agreement prohibits me from doing so. So the NFT market does nothing to solve that problem.
But I'm talking about specifically going back to the NFTs for Ubisoft and the database, right? Why that should just be a database, but the software licensing couldn't be a database, and by using this logic that this is in my head, because that is now owned by the company, and for the Ubisoft one, that's their IP, right? But the theory of a software license is that you should be able to sell that key to someone else or hand off that key to someone else without the permission of the IP holder.
You're talking about the problem of the licensing agreement you signed, the problem of having a mechanism to sell it.
Again, it's like we have a solution looking for a problem, and this is right. The only thing
but I've come up with, like, in my head. Why can't I create a database called the Software License Exchange and let people register and exchange their licenses? And it's just running on fucking Oracle or MSDB or whatever. Like, why does blockchain or NFT even need to be involved? Like, if all we need is
immutable?
Fine, I'll create an immutable database. Like, what is that? What? How does immutability help?
Because then it's auditable.
And but you know, a database but then, is auditable. Brings up,
then brings up the privacy concept of, like, you could track that license through who's bought it, right? Like, again, it's not a great answer, right? Like, I haven't been able to come up with anything better in my head. It's frustrating.
Right, but like, again, like, how easy it was to just like rebut the one idea that you can come up with. I can immediately give you like 10 reasons that.
Oh, I agree. Oh, I know. And it's complete. No, it's fine. Like,
right.
Rebut away. Like, I can't come up with anything better. And at least in this argument, at least I'm trying, right? To like, it's a mental exercise. And this is the best I've come up. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Laura.
Well, so I was going to say, you know, the same thing. You could attempt to say, oh, well, what about library books on a Kindle, like a digital library books and things like that? But of course, they're all still doing it without that. Right. We've been doing it for years. The one thing that I want to say is, like, no matter how immutable you make it, no matter how auditable you make it, it still takes up space and data and things like that. Like, the only way this is going to be like mind-blowingly useful for everyone else is if it didn't take up space, if it didn't take up that much power and memory and hard drives to store all of that history. And, you know, yeah, some people say, oh, well, you put it in cold storage. That's still space.
It is.
It's still all this stuff that you're taking up. Like, and if you ever want to go audit it, you got to pull it all out and plug it all in, and that takes up power. So, like, I think, to me, the one big thing that this comes out of this is that as we've moved to cloud computing and so many people have gotten out of the data center world, people are forgetting how much that takes.
Oh yeah.
People are forgetting, like, all of the hardware and the networking and all of these things that come in when you start thinking about all of these different pieces. Cause they're like, oh, it just goes onto cold storage. Yeah. That's just something I move in the UI, right? Like, that just means it goes to cold storage. No, that's not how things work. And so, you know, when people are doing all this, like, Ethereum or Bitcoin or whatever, and they're doing all this stuff, they're not thinking about just how much that data center is to run any of this stuff. Like, I don't know. I just find it fascinating.
IBM cloud, right? It's just an IBM cloud. It's fine.
Sure. Sure, JJ. Yeah. We can believe that that's where they are. We'll believe it for your sake.
I got to try. Gotta be
strong. I know you got to try.
Right. So now we've solved the dilemma of cryptocurrencies. Laura, why don't you tell us about what's new in the car world as our resident gearhead?
I have a funny story from the car world. But
A few people don't know that Laura was actually the third person in Click and Clack, the Car Brothers.
Oh, I was?
Yeah.
Yes. Aren't you? Silent one?
You were the silent one. You were the one that did all the work that didn't get
Oh, ouch.
That's cold. That's cold.
I mean, it was, what is it going to be? Click, Clack and Creek, the Car Brothers and some chick? Like, well, it doesn't roll off the tongue the
creek
same way.
Wouldn't work if I was the silent one, because that's creaky. Creaky. Anyway, all right, I'm going to stop now. No, but I do want to talk about this story, because I think it was really interesting. I could talk a lot about other car news, things like that, but this one is the intersection of cars and tech. So apparently, I think it's in Seattle, there was a bunch of Mazdas, I think it was like 2016 Mazdas, their entire system got bricked because a radio station was broadcasting data. And apparently the enriched data that puts the little picture up on your screen didn't have the file extension. And someone didn't clean up their inputs. So the program kept hunting for a file extension for this picture, and it got stuck. So like these cars, their radios are stuck on that radio station. You can't change the radio station. You can't change it to anything else. No other inputs. Apparently, I think the rear facing cameras do work, but you can't do anything else. You're stuck with that radio station. It's always on.
Amazing.
I mean, if you had a way to audible or to create an immutable database of file extensions.
They should have put it on the NFT, man. I told you.
Apparently. So the whole thing is Mazda is replacing them for free, but like, are you going to be able to get one right now? Good luck. Yes. You know, so that's part of the problem. So wait,
it's so bad you can't even like hard reset them.
No.
Get them to factory defaults. It's that bad.
No, because that doesn't work. Like you would have to actually wire it up to a testing harness on the bench to go and fix it, from what I've heard. So like,
wow, it's, this is amazing.
But it's stuck in a boot loop. somebody in the comments of this Ars Technica article I was reading was saying that the head unit loaded the image into cache, tried to decode it, hit the software bug, locked up, the watchdog rebooted. The first thing it does when it reboots is it tries to decode the image. And so it locks up forever. And so the only way you can do that is to actually go in and try to go, because like it's the same thing like when your firmware gets corrupted. Mm-hmm. You can't go in and fix it. You can't go in and update it unless you put all the right inputs in to be able to go all the way down to the bootloader. And like go way down below the firmware to then root the firmware out, put new firmware back in. So like, and you know, most car dealerships don't have this, you know, and frankly, like the people who maybe have this gets into the whole like right to repair world and things like that too, because that's another story that I'll tell in a minute. But anyway, it's basically bricked. Like they can't fix it out in the real world. So, I mean, and you can't really drive most of these cars without their head units anymore because they're all electronic.
Hey, Laura.
Yeah.
I just want to say I have deleted many a Grub and Lilo in my life. Many. I'm very good at destroying bootloaders. So
maybe we should fly you out there.
Yeah. Side hustle.
Thing is that this is not a right to repair situation. You do not have access. And that was the thing up in, I think it was Massachusetts. They passed Sorry?
John Deere? Wasn't the John Deere thing?
Oh, so there was the John Deere thing, but then there was something about cars. So in Massachusetts, I think it was, they passed a right to repair law. Well, because the dealers, because the car makers couldn't meet that right to repair law by the time it was supposed to get enforced, they turned off features in your car permanently as they were selling it to you. So it was Subaru and Toyota. Yeah. They actually turned off the remote start and like the heated seats and stuff because they did not have the ability to let people repair it and they couldn't get it built into the car in time.
Yeah. And I think more than that, it's like safety features, like the Subaru EyeSight, which is basically the twin cameras that look forwards and will like stop you if you're going to crash into something. I think they even had to disable that.
I have to look it up. I'm typing frantically right now, but it was Massachusetts. And so where is it? Fight over the right to repair cars turn ugly. But yeah, so they disabled the telematics systems and associated features on new cars because the open data platform doesn't work. And they kept asking, like, apparently the dealers were like, are you sure you don't have anybody you know in Rhode Island that we could register this under so that we can leave everything on? Yeah, like.
And it's interesting because I think the car manufacturers are getting a bunch of flack over it, but.
Oh, yeah.
It would be interesting to know how much of it is their fault, right? If it's a newish law and these car systems have been around for a while, there's a lot of work involved in making massive changes to them. And I think like people are like, well, they're turning these features off because of the law. I think the reality is they're probably legally required to turn these features
they
off.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's not that the car manufacturer is being a jerk. It's that they literally don't have a choice.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, like if you think
about I'm sure they want to make their thing sellable with all the things. And I'm sure they will at some point get these things under the correct, protocols and something and stuff so that they can be repaired, at least in future models. But I feel like there needs to be some amount of grandfathering in. Probably part of that would be some promise of goodwill from the car manufacturers to attempt to make it right for people that are falling in this weird gray zone where you have right for repair, but you can't actually do it.
Yeah.
So it's like a shitty situation all around that I think mm-hmm. could be made less shitty if the parties involved were willing to like actually come to the party and figure something out. And it just sounds like they're more interested in like measuring the size of their like legislative dicks than they are in actually doing the right thing by the consumer.
Yeah, it's absolutely silly. And I mean, if you think about it, like most of the car manufacturers, I think, are doing something very similar. Like that was the whole thing with the Toyota Way, was that small iterations. Like, it sounds a lot like software, doesn't it? For a good reason, because I think they went and studied the Toyota way to do agile. Am I remembering this right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you think about it, like if they only are doing small iterations, how are they going to build in all this right to repair stuff in less than a year if they haven't really changed their system drastically like that in decades? Yeah. So it's pretty, pretty interesting to say the least. I put the link in, hopefully that can end up in the show notes about the right to repair fight in Massachusetts. But yeah, it's interesting to say the least, all of this stuff that's happening in the car world, not to mention all the like EV stuff and cars getting released right now and all that. But from the tech side, there's some very interesting discussions going on.
Luckily, we have a decentralized system so they could just go to Rhode Island to register their car.
But, you know, like we do have this whole centralized system when it comes to crash metrics and stuff like that. So
that's true. Yeah.
You know, and NFTs, they have to go through all of that to make sure that they're safe before they're allowed to sell it in any of these other systems. And by the way, that decentralized system that has the dealers allowed to sell their cars, that's basically made car buying in the United States absolutely awful and bonkers. And pushed out any new and upcoming car makers. So therefore, you don't typically find new car makers in the United States.
Isn't Texas one of the worst ones for that? That's the reason why we have only Covert and Maxwell dealers, because they're the only ones that can be dealers or something like that.
Well, it's because they're the only ones who can afford the dealer fees.
Oh.
And it's a lot easier to become a big conglomerate and then pay for it and things like that. So you end up with this whole weird network. But it's amazing how, you know, this whole decentralized system has made it very not easy for small business owners to thrive when they said that was the whole point.
Yeah. Speaking of Texas making it difficult for new car manufacturers and new ways of selling cars, something I learned recently was we have similar stuff for liquor stores.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
don't get me started about the liquor stores.
Liquor stores are limited to, it's 5 stores or permit, unless you come from a family that had a liquor store before 1949.
Yep.
Really?
And so,
that's an interesting one. I haven't heard that one yet.
Specs and Twin Liquors are examples of liquor stores that existed before that and therefore are able to sort of loophole their way through.
Hmm.
Well, don't forget also liquor stores are locational too. The license is actually locational. So The building has the permit to have the liquor store inside of it. So if you, for whatever reason, had to move your liquor store one place over in a strip mall, you have to go through the whole licensing process all over again. From what I understand, though, here, at least here in Texas, we have some of the worst laws. So friends in other states are not in the U.S. You all are lucky, really lucky. But in Texas, from what I understand, believe it or not, Walmart and Costco are the ones that are lobbying hardest against the TABC to make these changes happen, because they've seen a drastic drop in their revenue because of the Sunday right of laws that we have and the weird 9 o'clock cutoff that we have for, and you can't buy liquor out of a liquor store. But even though, have you noticed, we're starting to see low high alcohol content mixers in grocery stores.
Yeah.
Like we're starting to see vermouth more. We're starting to see, I haven't seen tequila yet, but we're starting to see like the actual liquor mixers in there, which I thought was interesting.
So for people who aren't in the Texas area, let me just explain something. The Texas liquor stores or anywhere selling liquor has to shut down its registers at 9 p.m. So even if you're in line and you're in the middle of getting checked out, they will cancel the purchase and you have to leave at 9 p.m. When the clocks turn to 9, everything shuts down. Just to be clear. So like there have been times that we ran in to Specs specifically to get something for a friend or something. And we they had us sprinting through the line as fast as we could. And we realized like, if we leave cash, it's faster. So you can finish your transaction and get out, like kind of get past the register. If you're past the register, you're fine. But if you are in the middle of your transaction at 9 p.m., they will not finish the transaction because they're not legally allowed to. And it really baffles tons of people when they come to Texas. So, because I've never heard of that anywhere else I've ever lived.
Yeah, and then there's the Sunday rule, right? So liquor stores can't be open on Sunday, but also grocery stores can't sell beer or wine before 12. Although, did that change?
No,
I remember at one point they were talking about changing that like last year.
So specifically, it was proposed but didn't get passed. That's the reason why if you ever fly into DFW on a Sunday morning, like you can't go to like the TGI Fridays in DFW and get like a margarita for breakfast or whatever. So like, because you're flying and life's hell when you're flying, they'll tell you you need to buy food with it too,
right?
Because the responsible thing to do is have something also in your stomach. before going to church in the airport. I don't know.
Yeah. So that's the big trick is if you want to buy alcohol at like a bar or restaurant, it on a Sunday morning, it or Sunday at all, maybe it has to be morning, with food. Before noon. And so that's why a ton of those places have like a really cheap breakfast option.
Yep.
Yeah.
I will say, if you wait, so I've driven between Texas and New Mexico a couple of times, and it's amazing to see the Texas and New Mexico border, because in New Mexico, you can get the little airline bottles of liquor in gas stations, right? Yep. Like they're just there. They don't have the big bottles, interestingly enough, but they have the little liquor bottles. But as soon as you move over to Texas, all that stuff disappears because you can't buy liquor in gas stations. And it's such a weird, just like flip of switch where this arbitrary line, you go 10 feet over here, you can buy a little bottle of liquor and put it in your Diet Coke or whatever. You go over there and you're lucky you can find a liquor store like 10 miles away or whatever. So,
yeah. When I was growing up in Philly, on the Pennsylvania side, you could only have state liquor stores. And then in Jersey, you could buy wherever. Right. So you would cross the bridge.
Right.
What?
In Jersey? You're required to carry a gun in Jersey, right?
No.
Mm-mm. No? Oh.
Sorry. Okay. Not down there. Mm. Well, maybe if you were in Camden, but I'm talking about going over the Betsy Ross and going on the other side. Okay. Short version though is like you would go over and that's where people would go to get their liquor because you're not going into the state sponsored stores. Of course, they would also then come over and then drive a little further out of Philly to go get fireworks because you can't buy fireworks in Philly. And like, it's always funny how at the borders of states, there are these strange differences. And like, that's how you figure out what weird laws each state has. So if you're ever driving across the United States, I highly suggest you keep your eyes peeled for these weird little idiosyncrasies. That's like how you tell.
The casinos in Oklahoma, right on the Texas border.
Yep.
It's so funny.
It is so crazy.
It's sad, but funny.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know. When the people made these laws, just to defend the weirdness of it, like at the time, you couldn't travel easily from state to state. Like the idea of transit, of cross, like, I mean, think of Rhode Island is a perfect example. Rhode Island is small. The state is smaller than Houston, right? Like the concept of a state of being smaller than the city of Houston is bonkers. And at the time,
if the state is that small, then it would have always been easy to travel from state to state.
You get my point though. Like the concept of travel and the concept of space was so different when all these laws were put in. And it goes back to like the society we live in today where like the society we live in today does not reflect what was originally put down on because society was so like functions of society is completely different. And that's one reason why we're supposed to change, but unfortunately we're not because of dickheads.
Unfortunately we, I mean, and I say we, I don't mean we, because I'm not one of you, but there's this like,
yeah, he's become a citizen.
The founding fathers are like, you know, this put up on this pedestal as like, this is the way the country was formed. And this is therefore how we should be right now. And no, it's just so bizarre.
I'm as American as a founding father. Thank you very much.
I got to push back on all this because I think out of all of us, I'm the only one who was born here in the States. So correct. Just saying. No, most of us don't think that the founding fathers are amazing in the sense of like, you know, they knew everything. That was the whole point. Mm-hmm. The whole point was that like, so the way that the whole legislature was set up was to restrict the ability to make flash changes. Because it's supposed to take a ton of time to make a change so that people actually think about it. Like that was the whole idea because they saw people being able to make flash changes every time something they didn't like happened. And so they thought, oh, okay, well, we'll try this. And they knew they were wrong. That was the whole point of the checks and balances and being able to change things. Like
right.
you're not,
yeah.
It was never supposed to be this like formal, this is always how it shall be. It was supposed to be a living document and things were supposed to be able to change. That's why you could make amendments to the Constitution. That's why you could actually change the laws of the country. And it was also supposed to be decentralized in the sense of each state was supposed to have their own ability to make laws and each county. And there was this whole chain of how all of these things interacted. The problem is that it didn't scale that great when you started moving out and made the country much, much bigger. And again, yes, things take a ton of time to pass. They also probably didn't really expect people to get into this majorly entrenched two-party system. Because if I remember right, they didn't want a party system in the first place.
That's correct.
So like all of these
founding fathers didn't like the party.
No, they there's some
they
really
loved
famous
party, for, but they didn't like parties.
Wasn't Thomas Jefferson was like, this is a horrible idea. We should never do this.
I forget. Like, I mean, it's been a long enough time since I was in a history class, so I should remember, but I don't. But I don't remember who it was. But yeah, they basically were saying, you know, like, don't give into this kind of like divided system, because this is how things fall apart.
Right. But I guess. Well. I guess the intent is all well and good, but the reality is that people are holding on to the written words, not the intent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
spirit, people, not the spirit.
Too many people, and specifically too many people in charge, have decided that it's like it's the second only unto the Bible as far as it comes to like rules which must be obeyed.
I heard the Bible was rewritten a couple times.
And like the Bible. You know, you can't change the Bible, although, you know, obviously it's been changed many times because it's been translated and retranslated and whatever. But
well, things have gotten edited out. Yeah.
Right.
But I like to tie it all back, you know, like
NFTs.
I was going to say we're making the same mistakes again in tech.
Yes.
And of course, we're going to, because if you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat it. Right. So, and it's true. Like it's a trite comment, but it's true. Like, every time you think like, oh, the ideal is great. We were just saying that earlier. Oh, well, it's an interesting idea. I can see where the concept might be good. Oh, here's all these wonderful things that it could do. The metaverse, NFTs, whatever you want to talk about. Like, it's all the same thing. We're all going to make these mistakes over and over again until somebody realizes that, well, intents are great. That doesn't lead you to the final result.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing, let's wrap it up back to crypto and NFT. I think
let's do it.
For as long as it's not mainstream, at least when it crashes, it's not something that affects directly affects the entire population. Like when the
El Salvador, though,
financial crisis happened, everyone was affected and they felt the need to bail out the too big to fail banks and stuff. True. I just hope that we don't end up in that same position again. And like part of the worry there is like so many of the companies and the venture and all that stuff that was effectively behind that are also some of the big whales in crypto.
Yeah.
And so maybe we will have to bail out the same group of people again when crypto fails.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, we already kind of are. When it comes to this whole supply chain, silicone chips, supply chain crisis, you know, like,
right.
Where are those silicone chips going?
Right. Yeah. So much of that crisis is because of that massive demand on crypto and the ridiculous amount of money people are willing to pay for it. I mean, you know, why would you create chips for a car that there's no way you can get more than $1 a piece for? Because, you know, cars can't increase in cost that much when you can make it for a GPU that can then be sold for a kajillion dollars to someone who wants to, you know, create more, crack more algorithms to generate more coins to increase the wealth of, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the problem's not going away because every single time a Bitcoin is minted, the next one's harder.
Yeah,
right.
That's the whole point.
That's the whole point of the system. And so it's becoming more and more expensive, and not just dollar wise, but on the resources and everything else that are being taken. So mm-hmm. it's not an unlimited resource, which is intentional, but the problem is the only way to make more Bitcoin is to have millions of dollars worth of computer equipment, which means there's only 7 or something like people left in the world, or consortiums left in the world, that can effectively mint new coins because of the requirements. And so they're the only ones generating new wealth that is straight into their own pockets.
And each of the Bitcoins eventually ends up in some kind of ransomware industry, blah, blah, blah. Because, I mean, hey, isn't that what blood diamonds were like?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, just saying.
Well, hey, Elon Musk got his family money from blood diamonds. So, you know, maybe the next one of us can be a tech billionaire by having old family crypto money.
Yeah,
sure.
Apparently.
Well, I'll put my Bitcoin address in the show notes if you've made it this far and want to send me some Bitcoin.
Or so if you want to send him some NFTs to steal his Bitcoin, please do that.
There you go.
Yeah, don't do that, JJ.
No, I'm not going to.
So what y'all cooking this weekend? Super Bowl Sunday. Sunday.
So unfortunately... Well, unfortunately, as in the visual medium of my kitchen, you can tell it's a nightmare. But I am getting tabletas, which are the cross-cut ribs that are usually buy at a Mexican carniceria. And I'm going to be doing those on the grill because football, and those are glorious. And that is what I'm going to do.
Nice. I'm going to be making Nasi Lemak this weekend. Is it Indonesian?
You can't Indonesian. Spell it, can you, to put it in the search engine?
Malaysian.
Okay.
So it's a Malaysian dish that is, I think it's like a garlicky rice. That is then topped with a bunch of interesting sides, like fried dried anchovies and a bunch of other stuff. I think you cook the rice with pandan leaves. There's peanuts and a bunch of other stuff, and it's kind of like a breakfast food.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'll be doing that. Actually, last time I ate that, I was in Singapore. Was probably the Intercontinental Hotel, and up in their lounge they had breakfast every day, but they also had high tea every afternoon. Ooh. So you would go up and get like that three-tiered little thing of like cakes and desserts and stuff, and like a cup of hot tea. So there's a guy here in Austin, Nikolai McCrary, who is a food writer here, and he does like a monthly pop-up called Penang Shack, and he's partnered with someone that does like online cooking classes, and they're doing this dish. So I was like, sounds kind of fun, so I signed up for it.
Nice, sounds good. I am not celebrating Super Bowl Sunday because I never do, even though I'm from Philly and I really should, you know, Eagles, rah, but whatever. Sorry, that probably just revoked my Philly card. But anyway, I will be making a Polish casserole, which I have to figure out exactly how I'm going to make that. We got some homemade sauerkraut from my cousin, so we wanted to have something to go with it, so that should be tasty. Nice. But other than that, that's like the only really exciting thing, I guess, that I'm cooking.
I completely forgot to report this.
What'd you do?
I made conchas.
What?
Conchas. They're the Mexican sweetbread, the breakfast bread.
Oh, okay.
With the thing on top. And according to my mother-in-law, they are better than she gets at stores. So
nice. Good. Did you manage to break your floor again?
No.
Is that why they're there? Oh, okay.
No, not yet. Just checking. Not yet. I still need to fix that hole.
JJ, how long has it been since you need to fix that hole?
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah, it's a running joke now.
Laura, do you need kielbasa for your Polish stew?
I already have some, but if you know of a better place for me to get kielbasa, that would be great, because the last batch that I got was not so good.
So there is a place in like the Cedar Park Leander area called Kielbasa House, and you'll never guess what they make.
I don't know, Paul. I don't know.
They also make a bunch of pierogi and stuff as well.
Okay, I'll have to go check that out. Kielbasa House. I like that idea. All right. Well, I think we are just about at the end of our hour-long fun time.
We decided that we're all going to invest in NFTs, and I'm putting my Shibu license, my Shibu wallet in the in the show notes. No, JJ.
Okay.
Worth a shot. All right, y'all. Say bye.
Say bye.
Bye.